Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. And good morning. Hope you slept well. Hope you're getting a good start to your day. It's May Day, and May Day is a public holiday, usually celebrated May 1st, and here we are, May 1st. Kind of a spring festival, traditional spring holiday in a lot of places around the world. Dances, singing, and cake, usually part of the festivities. Double dust chocolate, please. That's what I'd like. And no dancing. I don't do any kind of dancing that involves my body moving. So I want to start with a passage as we get our day started. God calls us in only to turn around and send us out. So think of getting up to go to work or school as just being sent out. In Ephesians 2, verse 10, it says, God has made us what we are. He has created us in Christ Jesus to live lives filled with good works that he has prepared for us to do. So as you go out, get your day started. Think of yourself as just being sent out to go make a difference for the kingdom. All right. I didn't sleep for a good last night because the wood frogs are quite vocal and they're calling, and which I think is saying females come closer and males stay away. Of course, a calling frog also says to every predator in the area, hey, here I am. Come eat me. Seems like a very high stakes proposition. But all I know is they kept me awake, and I think that'll happen for about two or three more weeks, and then I'll get back to peace and quiet in the neighborhood. All right, we have a great show today. Jarrett Stepman's going to be with us from the Daily Signal, and he is actually pinch-hitting for Rob Louie this morning, so looking forward to chatting with him. And then the always amazing Paul Kengor is going to be with us in this hour as well. Paul's written a book, and it's been updated from about 6 years ago, and the book title is called Dupes, How America's Adversaries Have Manipulated Progressives for a Century. He is a riot. So we'll be talking to him in this hour as well. So we'll take a little break and then get on our friend from the Daily Signal, Jarrett Stepman.
Well, my bills are getting higher and my paycheck is getting lighter, but I'll take it a day at a time. First of the month keeps it coming up much too much, but I'll make it.
Good morning. It's 7 minutes after the hour. This is Bill Arnold sitting in today for Bill Arnold. And I have on our studio line Jarrett Stepman sitting in for Rob Bluey. Jarrett is editor and commentary writer for the Daily Signal and co-host of the Right Side of History podcast. Good morning, Jarrett.
Good morning.
Thanks for doing the show. We're always look forward to chatting with you.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much for having me on again.
Yeah, no, it's always a pleasure. So, I'm curious. I heard that you went to the White House Correspondents' Dinner, so it's nice to talk to someone that was actually there. Would love to get your thoughts on it.
Well, absolutely. This is actually the first White House Correspondents' Dinner I've gone to in my career. We have a White House correspondent, Fred Lucas, who's been going for about 8 years now. Uh-huh. But this is the first time I've had a chance to go to this, and of course, it was quite an interesting evening with, I think, the thing that made most of the news, which was this comedian that they brought on for this, was, I have to say, throwing some very, very nasty jokes at Sarah Huckabee Sanders, in particular, the Trump administration and conservatives, and gave what I would say was a very partisan comedy routine that I think shocked a lot of people, even in the audience, which was a mostly very liberal audience. It was interesting. I was there with my White House correspondent, and he said he's never seen anything like this in the 8 years that he's been going to this this dinner. So there was definitely, I think there were a lot of people saying that, you know, maybe this was not exactly what they would expect from something like the White House Correspondents' Dinner, which originally was intended to be a kind of evening where there was a good feelings, a little bipartisanship, a little good relations between elected leaders and the press. And I think that what happened during the evening was the exact opposite.
Mm-hmm. You know, Jared, I've always thought that, you know, there's the best kind of humor is the kind of stuff that makes people laugh and then makes them feel good about what they're laughing at. And I was just wondering, these partisan rants that she was basically going on, I mean, there was sometimes little construction, joke construction, as much as it was mean-spirited pokes right in the eyes of the people there. And I was just curious as to get your take on what that kind of humor says about the state of today's political discourse or today's journalism.
Absolutely. And I think some people were defending this and saying that, well, this was kind of a roast and you kind of get a lot of this kind of aggressive humor. But, you know, usually that's done with people who are at least initially of friendly relations. That you could tell when this comedy routine was given, it was laced with a lot of rancor and a lot of, I would say, anger. You know, it was very partisan. And it was, I have to say, I give a lot of credit to Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who sat through this. And, you know, of course, she was sitting right there having her physical parents mocked and attacked. And basically, I mean, she was called a liar during this thing, too. And, mm-hmm. you know, it was laced with a kind of bitterness and partisanship that I think, you know, kind of really exposed it as a partisan affair. I think that was what made it so bad. And I think that the humor itself, I think at some point during the evening, I think people kind of stopped laughing and they kind of realized exactly how vicious it was. And even the audience, I think, was more amenable to the views of the comedian. Even they were a little shocked by what they were hearing. I mean, C-SPAN at one point, which was airing the thing, actually had to cut the routine because she used so much profanity during her comedy routine. I mean, this is, you know, something that, again, it's supposed to be an evening of kind of bipartisanship and creating good feelings. And I think what people saw around the country who actually had a chance to watch this saw something very different. They saw a press that was hostile, especially to conservatives and certainly the White House. And was really, you know, it was kind of it was a bad look for the media. I don't think it portrayed the media in a very good light, which, you know, during this whole thing is trying to show that, you know, they are defenders of the truth and real journalism and objectivity. And, you know, I don't think you'd get that narrative if you watch this thing. So I think they're going to have a real reassessment of not only what these White House correspondent dinners are, but whether or not they're going to keep having these in the future, given what happened.
You know, Jared, it's interesting because, you know, amidst all the hoopla, you forget that the White House Correspondents' Dinner is an actual fundraiser, and they raise money for kids to go to journalism school so they can become journalists. I'm thinking, well, this is not a great precedence that's going on by witnessing what's happening in front of all these journalists.
Absolutely not. And I think if they are going to make changes to this thing, and they have actually discussed this given the disaster that was the evening. And I know they've thought about bringing on another comedian that is a more conservative comedian. But I would say that, you know, maybe what they should do is they should focus on the journalism itself. Focus on, you know, of course, the students who are trying to get these scholarships and,
right.
and focus on, you know, that they celebrated the First Amendment thing. And, you know, that's a great thing. I love the First Amendment. Focus on those things. Make it a better affair. We don't need the bad comedy routines that I think just create a lot of animosity and don't really serve the point, which is, hey, the press is an important part of, you know, what we do in this country and does keep leaders accountable. And, you know, to show it's so partisan and nasty and just these silly comedy routines, it really undermines the whole point of this. So I think they do need to have some major changes if they're going to keep this event going on and make it something other than just a really partisan event for left-leaning journalists to make fun of Republicans and conservatives.
Mm-hmm. Jared, I think some of the things that people write on the internet in response to things they hear and the mean-spirited things they say on the internet from the safety of their bunker or their personal basement, wherever they're writing this stuff from, for some reason it seems like it has set the stage for these words to actually just become part of a person's comedy show. It's crazy that instead of, you know, I sense that there was a lot of nervous laughter out there, you know, versus those kind of laughs that you laugh and you remember the laugh from, you know, sometimes you laugh really hard at something, you look back a year later and you're laughing again about something because it was so good. I don't think anyone's going to be laughing a year from now at any of these jokes. They were hardly laughing the night of.
Well, they really weren't, and they're really nasty. I mean, some were, you know, making light of the issue of abortion and things like this. And I have to say, I think even a lot of people in this crowd, that I think their viewpoints were very, I would say, closer to the comedians. I think halfway through this, they kind of realized the comedy routine really wasn't that funny, that it was more nasty than anything else.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people, I think there was a lot of silence. It kept going on for a very long time, and there was a lot of silence and people scratching their heads and a lot of groans at the jokes. So, you know, it's not going well when people are starting to groan and starting to be quiet. And even though they kind of agree with a person on some political matters, they think the jokes aren't so good, and they're unnecessarily vicious. And I think that was really the problem with this, is that, you know, the lack of funniness, the viciousness, and how personal some of these jokes were to people who were right there in the audience, people who came to this event as guests of the event, being publicly, you know, personally humiliated. I mean, that's a really terrible thing. I think that, again, that's not in tenor with, I think, what this thing was supposed to be. And I think that it really undermines their whole message. I mean, maybe it's a revealing thing, and maybe this is kind of a wake-up call that these things really do need to change. I know there are a lot of people that have wanted to end these dinners for years. They don't like them. They think it's a bad look for the country and for the press corps in particular to have these kind of events. So, you know, maybe it'll be a wake-up call that next year things will really change and get back to just celebrating journalism itself and the students who are getting these scholarships and sticking with that rather than these really terrible comedy routines.
Yeah. Jared, let me take a break. When I come back, I want to ask you about the Netanyahu press conference and the Iran deal. It is 16 minutes after the hour. I'm speaking to Jared Stepman from the Daily Signal. Be right back. After the hour, Jared Stepman is my guest. He's an editor and contributor to the Daily Signal. And usually we talk to Rob Bluey, but Jared said, yeah, I'm in for Rob Bluey today, which is always makes me very happy. Jared, let's talk a little bit about the press conference that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu had about the Iran nuclear program.
Yes, it really was. It really was an extraordinary thing. What he did was he laid out this incredibly bold and sophisticated intelligence operation by Mossad, which is Israel's kind of intelligence agency that took place earlier this year, in which they raided what was essentially a warehouse in Tehran, which is Iran's capital, and obtained what were really thousands and thousands of files relating to Iran's nuclear ambitions. And, of course, there was a deal that was struck in 2015, the so-called Iran deal under the Obama administration, that supposedly put a halt to Iran's nuclear ambitions, at least temporarily. That at least that was the narrative before this. And what was discovered in this raid of the compound was that Iran has basically had a secret program going this time to reboot their nuclear program. I think in these thousands and thousands of documents, I think they covered a lot of startling details that certainly upheld the narrative of Netanyahu and many people in the United States intelligence communities that Iran was not being forthcoming with what it was doing in this field, that it was not being straight with the international community, that it really had put a halt to its nuclear program. And, you know, beyond just the incredible mission that the Mossad undertook, which I think is really quite stunning, one of the most extraordinary in the history of any intelligence service, I think this really is dramatic news, especially in terms of this deal that President Trump has definitely started to review and started to think that the United States might pull out of. So I think this is a really big deal. I think that, yes, a lot of this stuff is things that people were already saying and things that we already knew, but this huge amount of information has been now uncovered. I think may start to change a lot of minds around the world as far as what we do about this Iran deal.
Mm-hmm. Comes as no surprise that it's sometimes difficult to trust people.
Well, that's the old saying from President Ronald Reagan: trust but verify.
And yeah.
In this case, we had an Israeli intelligence service that well, I guess, you know, kind of went a roundabout way of verifying what was going on there. And it does appear that despite what some have said in the American media, saying that Iran has been straight with this thing and that they have essentially upheld the terms of their agreement and that we should too, that's not the case, that Iran has rather surreptitiously engaged in this nuclear program, which I think certainly should be startling for people around the world. Iran has been an aggressive, hostile power. They are heavily involved in other regions in the Middle East, including Syria. They're including the regime of Assad. And I think that Iran is certainly seen as one of those rogue regimes, much like North Korea, that, you know, if they were to ever acquire nuclear weapons, it would be an incredibly dangerous thing. And, mm-hmm. and I think what this evidence kind of comes out, which Netanyahu uncovered, is that, you know, this is something, a reality that we could be dealing with very soon, given their nuclear ambitions, given their willingness to restart this nuclear program and their clear intent to do so. That should be something that worries everybody. And that's something that I think will bring in more people to start to question the validity of this deal and whether it was based on something that was truth or really something that was an incredible deception to world leaders. And so it's just a very important moment in foreign policy. Of course, it played out very dramatically on people's TVs. And certainly Israel has a very good reason for wanting to change this policy. Israel has been very much against the Iran deal since the beginning, and certainly a lot of people in the United States have been so. Some nations like France and Great Britain and Germany have been much more amenable to this deal and want us to stay in this, essentially. But, you know, I think after yesterday's press conference, I think there's going to be a lot of questions about whether that deal is viable at all, given the fact that Iran so obviously flagrantly violated it.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting, Jarrett. Let me ask you about what's been kind of interesting on Twitter feed has been this Kanye West. Is he becoming a conservative? What is going on with that?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting thing to see Kanye West, who, you know, I think most people in the past would not associate with conservative viewpoints or anything like that. But he's at least said some things on Twitter that says that, well, you know, he wants to be open-minded about it. I think last week he sent out a tweet that said, well, he hadn't really studied conservatism that much, but he's interested in reaching out, and he has certainly reached out to some people on the political right in this country. I do think this is kind of a good thing. Now, I wouldn't necessarily think that, oh, yes, this is Kanye's epiphany and that he's going to become overnight a conservative, but it shows that somebody who is a celebrity, who does have an enormous microphone, who a lot of people listen to, is willing to at least reach out to the other side and say, you know, I'm not just going to take what the rest of Hollywood says about conservatives and people with traditional values. I'm going to actually try to learn these things for myself and keep an open mind. And, you know, whatever comes of what Kanye does and his kind of journey to figure out what conservatism is, I think it is a good message to the country that, hey, you know, sometimes you need to look at, you know, other ideas. You need to start to examine your own beliefs. And I think that to a certain extent, conservatives need to be a little wary and fully embracing everything that Kanye is about. But certainly if the man is willing to engage with those ideas and is curious about what they are, I think people should reach out to him and say, well, hey, this is what we believe. And I think that's good for the public debate. I do think it's interesting that he has come under attack from other celebrities and many people on the left for even saying these things, which I think is pretty incredible, maybe a very, very telling thing. I think, you know, maybe people are so used to their celebrities being so far left wing that it shocks a lot of people to see one that who's even says he's curious about what the other side has to say. But I do think it's a good thing on him to be reaching out to the other side and trying to figure out his own views. I think that's definitely an important thing. But people shouldn't go too far in thinking that, well, this means that Kanye West is somehow a staunch conservative overnight. I think that may be going a little too far.
Yeah, but Jared, it's interesting because the pushback he's getting probably is a little bit of a result of him having the influence he has and the ability to sway minds, and the liberals really don't like that at all.
Well, absolutely. I mean, to a certain extent, I mean, this is really part of what brought President Donald Trump to office. I mean, Trump himself was in many ways a kind of mainstream celebrity before he became really politicized and became political and ran for office. You know, and he had this enormous megaphone that kind of goes beyond that of any politician. I mean, more people listen to Kanye's music than pay attention to politics. I mean, you could say that's maybe not necessarily a good thing, but it's reality. And I think that, you know, certainly celebrities have used their influence to push their views, and you know, a lot of people have listened to them. And I think Kanye coming out and saying, "Hey, I'm embracing some elements of conservatism. I'm keeping an open mind about this. I want to learn about this. I'd even push this if I believe it's true." I think a lot of people are going to hear this message who have maybe never even in their lives have heard any kind of message that isn't out of this kind of left-wing bubble. And, you know, I would say for the country, that's a good thing. And I think that, you know, maybe he can at the end of the day change some minds. And people who are conservatives shouldn't be entirely unwilling to reach out to him and say, "Hey, you know, this is what I believe. These are the principles that I believe in. You know, I think these are good things, and if you embrace them, then that's great for you." And I hope you spread that message to more and more people, and to do what the average person can't do, which is reach millions and millions and millions of people around the world.
Yeah, you are good, Jared Stepman. You are good. I love Rob Bluey, but I got to get you on a regular spot here on the show. Thanks for coming on. Have
well,
a great
thank
day.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
You bet. All right, it's 28 minutes after the hour. We'll take a very short break and be back. Hello and good morning. It's 31 minutes after the hour. We are going to take a little break for news. When we come back, Dr. Paul Kengor, he wrote a book called Duped, How America's Adversaries Have Manipulated Progressives for a Century. It's been updated and it's just gotten released this month. We're going to have a very lively conversation with Paul. Be back in a minute.
The opening line of a book gives tremendous insight into the book itself. This one opens with, "In the beginning, God created." This is Jim Garlow in a special series for the family. God begins the Bible creating a series of days. "It's good," he says. "It's good. It's good." And then all of a sudden, "It's very good." What has he made? He created you. He created a husband and a wife, a marriage. It's called the law of first things. Just barely into the story, God drops in humanity and sex and gender specificity of one flesh marriage. There are 31,000 verses in the Bible, and we're only 27 verses in. We have male, female, marriage, and the command to multiply. God is underscoring how important the family is to him. There's more to say on this in the days ahead. Don't miss it. This is Jim Garlow.
Welcome back to the show. Paul Kengor is a regular guest on the show, and I love it when he comes on. He's a New York Times bestselling author of A Pope and a President, God and Ronald Reagan, The Crusader, and other books. He's a professor of political science and an executive director of the Center for Vision and Values at Grove City College. He's written a book that's being re-released we're going to talk about called Dupes, How America's Adversaries Have Manipulated Progressives for a Century. Welcome back to the program, Paul.
Hey, thanks, Bill. Anytime.
Great book, interesting title, and it's becoming more and more relevant, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, we first released this book back in 2010, and that was just 1 year into the Obama presidency, and we've had a lot of different things that have happened then, and plus more historical information, and I've added things to the book on people from Ted Kennedy to Margaret Sanger to Charlie Chaplin, FDR,
mm-hmm.
you name it. It's kind of sad to see kind of a literal century of kind of more liberal progressive types being snookered and suckered by the communists, but it's gone on. It's unfortunately it's gone on for a long time.
Yeah. Well, Paul, let's talk about the coverage of the collusion between Russia and the American president, which apparently there is no proof of, and yet you have dug into the past scandal of Ted Kennedy and some of the things that he did, and I'm not talking about Chappaquiddick right now.
Well, that's right, Bill. In fact, I'll tell you what it is about Kennedy, and then people could think of that in light of the allegations that are going on today against Donald Trump. But with Kennedy, so we published this back in 2010, so we're once again republishing it. And in the appendix of the book, and we also have a full chapter of this, I have a May 14th, 1983 KGB document. It's a literal KGB document. It's written by the head of the KGB, Viktor Chebrikov, to the head of the Soviet Union, Yuri Andropov. It is 5 pages in Russian. I'm looking at it right now. It is, once translated, the translated version we have is 3 pages in English. And it says Special Importance, Committee on State Security of the USSR, that's KGB. And it says, regarding Senator Kennedy's request to the General Secretary of the Communist Party, Yuri Andropov, at the very top. And then it goes on to say that on 9-10 May of this year, Senator Edward Kennedy's close friend and trusted confidant, Jay Tunney, was in Moscow. Now, right there, Bill, Jay Tunney was Senator John Tunney, Democratic senator from California. And it says, the senator charged Tunney to convey the following message through confidential contacts to the General Secretary of the Central Committee of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union, Yuri Andropov. And what it then goes on to say is that Senator Ted Kennedy was really worried about the state of U.S.-Soviet relations, and it says right here in the memo, he blamed this deterioration in U.S.-Soviet relations not on the Soviets, not on Yuri Andropov, who was a murderous dictator, but on Ronald Reagan and Reagan's belligerence, as this document put it. And so because of that, he actually offered – this is all said within the context of the coming 1984 presidential reelection campaign as well. But he said because of that, Kennedy was offering – to fly to Moscow to meet with Andropov, to bring Andropov and high-level Soviet and military officials to the United States as well, to meet with American media contacts. And all of this would be to, quote, influence Americans, unquote, and counter the militaristic policies of Reagan, quote, unquote. So, you know, that is it's a shocking document. It was written in May 1983. It was published in full in my book in 2010. We're putting it out again in 2018. And I could tell you, Bill, what's going to happen this time around, like what happened in 2010. I'm going to get no requests whatsoever from anybody at the New York Times or Washington Post or CNN or MSNBC. They're all going to ignore this. And meanwhile, they're digging under every possible rock and everything they possibly can 24/7 to find anything between the lowest level Trump campaign aide and anybody or anything in all of Russia in 2016. If you want a scandal, I mean, you know, this was a scandal.
It's unbelievable, Paul. It's unbelievable. Now, Kennedy didn't he approached Russia more than one American president, I mean, to try to get undermined. Is that correct?
That's right. And for people who are listening who are Democrats and, you know, maybe they like Kennedy. Kennedy was the lion of the Senate, right? And, and so maybe they didn't like Ronald Reagan very much. Well, I got news for you. He did this as well in March of 1980. He did the same thing back then to Jimmy Carter. And this is – I mean, this one is disgusting. I mean, this is so over-the-top outrageous. March 1980, the Soviets had just invaded Afghanistan. And they invaded Afghanistan 6 months after Jimmy Carter literally smooched, right? Gave a kiss on the cheek. We have a cover of that, we have a picture of that in the cover of this book. Carter literally kissed Leonid Brezhnev at the Vienna summit, and then 6 months later, the Soviets invaded Afghanistan. It was like 2 days after Christmas, and Carter was just shocked by that. Zbigniew Brzezinski, right, his national security advisor, Mr. President, I want to wish you a Merry Christmas, and I got bad news for you, sir. Your kissing buddy and the Red Army just invaded Afghanistan. So big time aggressive actions by the Soviets. And then in March of 1980, with the U.S. election campaign coming up and Ted Kennedy challenging Jimmy Carter for the Democratic nomination, that time too reached out to the Soviet leadership to lament this deterioration in U.S.-Soviet relations, which he blamed on Carter, on Carter's aggressiveness, rather than on the Soviets. Ted Kennedy, this was a pattern by him. He did it to people in his own party as well as people in the opposite party as well.
Mm-hmm. Paul, it's unbelievable. I can hardly believe what you're saying. No, it really is. So has the communists always sort of targeted American liberals?
Yeah, they have. And you know, here too, I know some liberals would probably maybe, you know, yell at their radio and, well, why did you just say they target liberals and not conservatives? Well, because liberals being liberals and on the left part of the political spectrum, they're not necessarily communists, but they can be more pro-communist, or let me say more sympathetic with certain of the goals of communists: wealth redistribution, collectivism, you know, labor rights, trade unionism, that kind of thing. So if you're a communist, you're going to target those guys rather than target, like, you know, William F. Buckley Jr., Ronald Reagan, and Joe McCarthy, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, you're not going to target the fire-breathing, you know, anti-communist.
Right.
So for a really long time, that's what they've done, and they've done it with great success. I have probably one of the most sad chapters in the book, especially if you're an old movie buff like me, was the way that they had a campaign in the summer and fall of 1947 to target progressive Hollywood actors and actresses. And they convinced Lauren Bacall, Humphrey Bogart, Gene Kelly, Judy Garland, all these great golden age Hollywood people, yeah, they convinced them all. These were the accused members of the Hollywood Ten, who when they all got to Washington, they found out that every single member of the Hollywood Ten was a literal card-carrying communist. They had their five-digit CPUSA numbers, Communist Party USA numbers, when they got there. And when they got there, Humphrey Bogart, among others, said, "Man, were we suckered. Man,
wow,
were we duped." And Bogart exploded, swearing at everybody, you know, dropping F-bombs.
Actors don't do that.
Yeah, right.
Paul, if I can, just because we're on a time break right here,
yeah,
let me take a break. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation. My guest is Dr. Paul Kengor. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. We're speaking to Dr. Paul Kengor. He's a book that he has written called Dupes, How America's Adversaries Have Manipulated Progressives for a Century. Is being re-released. And right before break, Paul, we were talking about the way the Hollywood Ten were suckered in, and Humphrey Bogart in particular was outraged.
Yeah, he was absolutely outraged because what happened, Bill, were these members of the Hollywood Ten, Dalton Trumbo, who was recently canonized in a Hollywood movie, you know, portraying him as an innocent progressive liberal just pursuing his civil liberties before he was hounded by Joe McCarthy, right, and HUAC. And by the way, Joe McCarthy wasn't a member of the House Committee on Un-American Activities. He didn't even come on the scene on this stuff till a few years later. He was more like 1950. But they were Dalton Trumbo, John Howard Lawson, who was known as Hollywood's Commissar. They were summoned to Washington by the House Committee on Un-American Activities, which for most of its existence was run by Democrats, anti-communist Cold War Democrats. And all these members of the Hollywood Ten told their lead actors and actresses, "Hey, you know, these people in Washington are a bunch of fascists. They're a bunch of Nazis. Right? How dare they say this? What liars they are! You know, we're fellow liberals and progressives just like you." And Bogart and Bacall and all of them, they believed their friends. They went on this public, what they called Bill of Rights tour. Danny Kaye was mm-hmm. another. They took a train all the way across America, different whistle stops, and they would talk about how innocent these people are and how the U.S. Constitution is being set ablaze by these fascists on Capitol Hill. And then they got there, and they found out, well, gee, lo and behold, Congress actually has some evidence. And they had CPUSA memberships. They had checks written out to the Daily Worker for subscriptions. They had all kinds of just tons of evidence. And of course, John Howard Lawson and these guys, when they were confronted with this evidence, Lawson literally threw a fit in the congressional hearing room and just started yelling, "Nazis! Fascists! This is another Reichstag fire going on right here in Washington. I've never seen such a bunch of mini Hitlers in my life." And stomped out of the room, and they're like, oh, okay, this is how these guys react when you present them with evidence. But as for Bogart and the rest of them, they said, wow, we've been lied to. Bogart said, we went green and they beat our brains out.
Mm.
That was his exact phrase. And to this day, if you go, you know, around our different wonderful colleges and education system, you learn that the Hollywood Ten were a bunch of innocent liberal lambs who were persecuted by vicious McCarthyites, a fang Joe McCarthy in Washington. And you hear nothing about the fact that, no, the real liberals who were persecuted were the ones who were lied to by their communist pals. You know, people like Bogart and Bacall. Those are the ones who were embarrassed.
Paul, you know, I'm keeping a running tab of how many times I'm saying wow, either out loud or in my head, and right now it's 14. So,
good.
Yeah.
Good.
I'm just curious, how do today's liberals respond to your research and your discoveries?
Well, they ignore it.
Okay.
That's really true. Yeah. I mean, when Dupes first came out in 2010, I did very, very few interviews with liberal sources. In fact, I right now at this moment, I can't even think of one. And I probably did over 100 interviews, probably a couple hundred interviews. They've never responded to the Ted Kennedy stuff. The Margaret Sanger stuff in Dupes, I mean, that ought to really horrify them. I talk about her 1935 trip to the Soviet Union in the middle of the Stalin era, and she went there to find out what they were doing with birth control. And she was so thrilled with what she saw that she said, it'd be a Bolshevik Russia is so wonderful. There are no legal or religious or moral restrictions or obstacles to government-funded birth control. She said, we could well take example from Bolshevik Russia. And she was writing that in 1935. She wrote in her Birth Control Review, her flagship publication of Planned Parenthood, when she came back. And here we are in America today, 80-some years later, where birth control instruction is part of the quote-unquote regular welfare service of the government,
mm-hmm.
which is exactly what Sanger said they had in Stalin's Russia and exactly what we should do today. This is interesting, though, Bill. She was shocked at the number of abortions that she saw there in Russia.
Wow.
She said, this is really horrific. This is real. Yeah, she was aghast at the number of abortions, which she was told could be as high as 100,000 in Moscow alone. Of course, Planned Parenthood does five or six times that many abortions per year in the United States today. So what shocked her back then ought to really shock people today, but instead liberals have just progressed to the point where what was horrific in the 1930s, they now see as standard policy today. And in fact, if you object to any of this today, they condemn you today as being the extremists.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. All right, Paul, we just have a minute left. What would people gain from reading the update of your book, Dupes?
Well, you'll learn this kind of information that we're talking about here, and you'll also learn how the New York Times is celebrating communism today
mm-hmm.
having made women's lives better in China and providing, get this, Bill, better sex.
Oh, my.
For women in the Soviet bloc.
Yeah.
And that being the case, why wouldn't any gal want to be a communist? Right?
Oh, Paul, you're so entertaining. I can hardly stand it. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And, you know, if you have not bought the book, Dupes, it's when does the re-release take place?
Right now.
Right
so
now.
If you
awesome.
Go to Amazon.com, make sure you click the paperback version because the
okay.
paperback is the updated version.
Okay. Thank you so much, Paul. I look forward to our next conversation and have
okay.
a great day. Yep. We'll take a
you
short
too, Bill.
Yep.
Thanks.
We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute.
Feel free to stop by on your way to work. The Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold on Faith Radio. If the front door's locked, use the secret knock.
Thanks to Paul Kangor. I find him so entertaining. Looking forward to the next hour coming up. At the top of the hour, the college football community has taken a collective deep breath as Edina's junior Quinn Carroll announces where he's going to be attending college. He got 34 invitations from colleges all around the country. And tonight on Care 11, on the news program at 10 o'clock tonight, he's going to be making that announcement. I'm going to chat with him just briefly, though. He's not going to reveal anything, but he is going to come on the show at 4 minutes after the hour, and we're going to chat about the big decision and the spiritual disciplines that he used to just come to a decision as to where he's going to go. So that's all ahead next, and we're looking for a great hour. Be back in a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.